Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Pearlman. My guest is painter, illustrator, and writer Annie Campbell. Campbell is a self-taught painter, born in Wales but brought up in Ithaca, New York. She received her first commission as an artist at the age of 16, and through the years created murals, watercolor paintings of portraits and landscapes, illustrations for children's books, greeting cards, CD covers, and even painted carousel horses at Stewart Park in Ithaca. Earlier this year, she also published an illustrated memoir of her early life called The Whore Next Door. It's available through her website. And welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Now, you were born in Wales, but your family moved to Ithaca when you were about three. And you describe yourself as wild and rebellious. Tell us about that. What was a wild and rebellious child doing drawing and, you know, sitting quietly like that?
Well, my parents told me I was wild and rebellious from the beginning. I, of course, don't really or didn't realize it at the time. My mother said that the only way I would ever sit still and be quiet was when I was drawing and painting. So starting around two, she got me art supplies. And it was gray in Ithaca a lot and cold. So winters, she had me indoors more than she'd like and kept me busy painting.
So that's and, how you started.
Wow. Yeah, and I remember at one point she asked me, or I asked her if I could have a coloring book because kids at school had coloring books. And she said, no, I wasn't allowed to have a coloring book because I was much better at making things up on my own and I didn't need to have a coloring book. And then years later, I actually did two coloring books for McBooks Press.
That is great.
I thought it was funny that I was doing coloring books when they were actually a forbidden thing in my household.
I can understand why somebody would forbid that, because it does. It sort of stifles creativity to make kids stay in the line, especially a rebellious kid.
Yeah, and I'm grateful to her for that. And she was always my harshest critic. And also, if she said, this is really something. I love this. You did something fantastic here. I believed her, even though she was my mother. I felt like, well, she's telling me the truth because she really would tell me when it's like crap.
Yeah. Do you remember what some of your early subjects are? I know you do portraits and great little illustrations and stuff. What were some of the early things that you were focusing on?
I always loved drawing people, and I have what I call those guys because they're never realistic people, but they're certainly sort of caricatures. And my father was a professor at Cornell, taught math, and he had many cocktail parties at our house, and people from all over the world would come to these cocktail parties, and they were all really interesting. But something about them, they were unusual looking, too, in my mind. And I would draw pictures of them, and a lot of the men had these big honking noses, I thought. And I would draw those noses, or they had ears that stuck way out in a certain way, and they were all people who were incredibly kind and nice to me, and I enjoyed their company. I loved when my parents had these parties, and I was allowed to come and say goodnight before my brother and I were sent off to bed. And these people would entertain me. Some of them could do magic tricks, and so I always loved them.
Created this great fantasy world almost around them. Well, what do you think the impulse was for you to paint? And you've continued all through your life. What do you think that was? Were you trying to express yourself or just trying to express the world around you in some ways or make sense of it?
I don't really know why I did it. I do know that I was incredibly bad in school. I didn't understand directions very well. I think if I was in school now, I'd be labeled learning disabled.
Or maybe dyslexic or something.
I think I was still dyslexic. My parents were always incredibly nice about my artwork, and so were my teachers, because I was so bad in school, but I could clearly draw, and I liked to, and so I was always encouraged. And we went away on sabbatical when I was 10 to Switzerland, and I was given the prize at the school for my artwork because I was hopeless at everything else. And and it was always sort of like that. Then when I was 16 years old, my parents, well, my mother in particular, had really had it with me. I was so obnoxious and hard to deal with when I was a teenager that in the middle of 11th grade, I was sent off to a boarding school.
Really?
Yep. And it was called the Cambridge School of Weston, and it was co-ed, and it was in the 60s, and it was extremely liberal. And there was a wonderful art studio, and I was allowed to take art. And I skipped classes a lot, and they let me get away with that.
That's amazing. You knew so young that you wanted to be an artist.
Well, I didn't consider myself an artist, but I certainly liked hanging out in the art studio. And and my teacher was a wonderful woman who was named Liz Upham, and she didn't like being in school either. And she happened to be given the job of being my advisor. So she actually took me out of school and took me to the Cape in the middle of school once. She said that this student needed to get away. And off we went. And had a wonderful time at the little house she owned in Wellfleet. And then we'd come back. And, you know, she's dead now, so I think I can say this about her, and she won't be in trouble. But we'd smoke dope and we'd drink beer. And
you were already on the road to being a rebellious soul, I must say.
Yeah, and she was really great.
You said you also started traveling when you were in your late teens, traveling all over the place.
Well,
and doing your art while you were doing it?
Yeah, I was not traveling that much until after I married. I got married when I was 18. And
okay, so that's your late teens still, though.
Yeah, and had my first child when I had turned 20, just by 2 weeks. So, and after that marriage broke up, which it didn't last very long, that's when I started moving around, and I took my son with me, and
we
ended up in San Francisco, and I had another child by a different man out there. And
you were definitely a rebellious child. But all through this, you were painting, right? Tell us about, you got your first commission at 16. It was an erotic mural, right?
Yeah, well,
tell us about that.
I was at the Cambridge School still, and my best friend there was named Joan, and we would go to her place in New Hampshire when it was vacation time. Sometimes I'd come home to my parents, and I always got along fine with them even after they sent me away from school. They still loved me, and I loved them. So anyhow, one time when Joan and I were at her parents' house in Keene, New Hampshire, we were asked if we'd like to paint a mural for a couple who wanted an erotic mural in their bathroom. And so I came up with the idea of a centaur making love to a big, voluptuous woman lying on her back, sort of up on a knoll with flowers all around
her. That's something you did at 16. I can't believe it, Annie.
Yeah, and my friend Joan helped me, and we painted this thing, and God knows if it stayed on the bathroom wall for more than a week. I have no idea. But that's what we did.
And then you later on you painted the carousel horses at Stewart Park. Tell us about that. That's the sweetest thing. I remember seeing them, thinking that they were so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And this must
you.
Have been after you'd already painted them.
Well, I think I painted them in 1986.
It had to be after them because I came here much later than that.
Yeah, and they were recently painted just last year, I think, or the year before. I lose track of time, but I think it was last year. They were repainted, but not by me.
I must have seen yours, though. Yeah.
But I went to Stewart Park with my nephew and with my husband, Harley, and the horses desperately needed painting, and I had ridden them when I was 3 and 4 years old and up for, and to me, they were real when I was young. And looked at the horses and thought they should be painted, and then I thought, well, I should paint them. So I asked the girl running the thing, how do I talk to the person who owns these? And she said, well, it's my father. I said, can I have his number? And she gave me his number, and I called him from the park. And he said, well, I have a drawer full of people who volunteered to paint. I suppose you want money. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, well, come and see me tomorrow. So I went home and I painted a carousel horse, a dapple gray with a very fancy saddle and the pole.
Oh, yeah.
As if it was a carousel. And took it to him the next morning and put it on his desk. And he looked at it and he said, well, how much do you want? And I said, $10 a horse? And he looked at me with this kind of odd expression, and I thought he was going to say, well, forget it. And he said, well, how about $30 a horse? And I said, oh, great, yes, wow. Thank you.
How long did it take you to paint each horse?
You know, I got really fast at it. The first one took me all day. The second one, I got faster, and by the third one, it took me about 3.5 hours per horse, and I think there were 35 of them, but there might have been 37.
Wow. Did that end up being a fun job for you, or
it ended up
being grueling, like painting a house or something?
No. It was wonderful, partly because I was right in the office of Wheaton's Sheet Metal, which was the building and the place that he owned, and his office was right next to where I was painting, and he would come out probably every half hour and just ooh and ah over these horses. And he was just the sweetest man, and still is. His name's Monty May.
Oh, that's so great. God, not many artists can tell you that they've painted carousel horses.
Well,
that is really amazing.
I thought they were going to be, I had never really thought about what they were made out of, but these were made in 1950, apparently. They were made out of aluminum, cast aluminum, mm-hmm. and they still are, the ones that are there. They're not wood. And actually, when I was painting them, there was an article about it. And a man in Tonawanda, New York, read it. I think it was Tonawanda. He is the man who painted them before I did. He painted them in 1950.
Wow.
And his wife actually wrote me the cutest, sweetest letter of how excited he was that I was painting them, and it had been his lifelong job. And he wasn't very well anymore, but he just loved seeing those horses. So I wrote him a letter, and I sent him pictures of all the horses when they got done.
That's really nice. Such a part of history, because they don't even make horses like that anymore. They don't make carousels like that anymore.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really amazing. You know what I want to know, too? I know you're a self-taught artist, so you don't have all those networks that people do when they go to art school and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you started doing illustrations for children's books. How did you find all these connections?
Well, actually, that carousel horse job really opened up the painting world for me, and there were a lot of articles about it, and even a video made about it that was in a movie, just a short piece in it. And all of a sudden, I started getting jobs to do things. And the illustrations for children's books, I have to say, are local people that had read about me in the paper, I think. Mm-hmm. And I was asked by some people to put my paintings in their store. Back then, not many people did that. Now it's sort of common.
Yeah.
But I was asked by Joan Rahm, who owned a women's clothing store on the Commons in Center Ithaca. And I sold a lot of paintings out of her store.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Annie Campbell. She's a painter, illustrator, and a writer. We're talking about her work through the years. Now, it sounds like you're always painting. I picture you with a paintbrush under your pillow when you go to bed at night, honestly. I mean, you paint furniture, you do illustrations.
I have fooled you. That is not true. I actually went through a big, long period where I fought going into my studio like crazy. I always was very responsible about doing any commissions I got and enjoyed doing them. It was kind of, it took away the thing of looking at a blank page and wondering, what the hell am I going to do?
Yeah.
You know, it gave me, this is what I have to do, and off I'd go and do it. But it isn't that I didn't have ideas of what to do on the blank page, but I always felt too lazy to do them. I had this feeling of just wanting to curl up in a ball and going to sleep whenever I got an idea that I thought would actually be a good idea for a painting. No, I'd rather sleep. Not that I would go and sleep, but instead I'd go and clean the bathroom or, you know, do the laundry. And I used to make myself laugh because I'd say, would you rather play with paints and a nice paintbrush, or would you rather clean the toilet with this brush? And I'd go, I think I'll go clean the toilet.
That is really trying to get away from it.
With me, you know. But I got very sick at one point in my life. About 10 years ago, I had cancer. And I had to sit around in a chair for 4 months coughing and trying to recover because I was scared to death to get chemo and refused to go and get help and was trying to figure out what to do about it. And eventually my husband told me he was going to leave me if I didn't let him take me to the hospital, and because I was almost dead. And I said, okay, I'll go. And the chemo helped me out instantly. Well, in that crazy 4 months when I sat there letting my mind wander, I had the best time just thinking over my life and all the things that had really amused the hell out of me. And at one point, I decided I wanted to go and write down one of the things that I thought about. And pretty soon, I had a whole book.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I've always wanted to have grown-up books be illustrated. When I was a kid, I felt sorry for grown-ups that they didn't have illustrations. So I knew from the beginning that I would illustrate it. And I finished the writing eventually, and I started doing the illustrations. And really, for the last 5 years, my main concentration has been on doing the illustrations for the book, which are all done.
And in some ways, it saved your life, right? I mean, it got you back into art again.
Yeah, but the thing that I came up with while I was sick that answered why do I feel so lazy and why can't I face going in there, I asked my mind to give me the answer. And I don't know if it took me 10 minutes and I fell asleep and came up with it 3 hours later or what, but all of a sudden I realized that if I treated anyone the way I treated myself in that studio, they would never go in there. In fact, they'd leave my house screaming because I was so self-critical. And I wasn't that way with my commissions.
That's really interesting.
I knew what people wanted. I knew that I could do what they wanted, and they were always incredibly nice and said they were so happy with these things that I would give them. But when I was trying to do something, I just saw everything wrong with it.
Well, why do you think that is, though? And then you turn around and write a memoir. I mean, so you go from, you know, running away from yourself in some ways to diving in and really trying to make sense of it, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, until you said that, I never even thought about it. The writing part to me, the writing part was completely shocking because I had been so bad in school. And I never had written a long paper in my life, and I had no idea how to write, and here I was just deciding to write. But I had so much fun with it. It was kind of like I didn't care about the writing because I never thought of myself as a writer, and I wasn't self-critical. But I really cared about the painting because it was the way that I had been making the little piddly bit of money that I'd been making. I would have starved to death without a nice husband, you know. But it was important to me that I become a painter or become a good painter, whatever that might be, you know, who knows. And
the illustrations in this book are beautiful. I mean, I have to tell people that. They really are. The book is called The Whore Next Door, and it is available through your website because it was self-published. The paintings in it are absolutely impressive.
Well, thank you. A lot of them I did 4, 5, 6 times over, and I can't imitate myself because it's too boring. So every time I'd have to come up with a new one for a chapter, and oh my God, it was crazy messing with those paintings. But I did get through it, and the one painting that I did do over and over again was my self-portrait for a chapter called The Letter. And I think that I just kept working at it because I'd never done portraits, real portraits, before. And I finally said to myself after number 26, well, if it takes me 100 times to learn how to do a portrait, that's actually not that bad. And I nailed it on the next one, I felt. It just finally, I stopped criticizing myself and said something nice, you know, like, you're doing it, you're getting better, keep going.
So do you feel like you had to, like, stand back from yourself in your life almost like a critic?
Yes.
And paint it and write it almost like someone who wasn't really reliving it but observing it in some way?
That's interesting that you asked me it like that. Actually, when I started writing, and I put what I had done in some kind of chronological order at some point and thought, oh, this is a memoir. I started that book at age 18, with a few flashbacks, but basically it's 18 to 35, my wild years. And I thought that as I was writing it, I'd be, for instance, the chapter of when I get married and I'm 18 years old. I didn't even tell my poor parents that we were getting married. We just went off and got married in Michigan.
And, that's probably why it didn't last.
Well, probably. Exactly. But, you know, as I was writing, I was thinking, oh, this poor kid, you know. I'm having this wonderful time when I'm 18, but looking back on myself, I'm thinking, oh, my God, the poor naive little thing.
See, you were able to forgive yourself by doing this. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, before we do run out of time, I want to know, because you are self-taught, and it's very impressive that your illustrations are incredibly good. Who are your influences? Are you influenced by other illustrators and other painters?
You know, I probably am, and I don't really know it, but this is embarrassing to admit, but my parents wanted to take me to museums, and honestly, I didn't like going places with them. I liked going places with myself, all by myself. That was what I wanted to do. But I told my mother, and I gave her this excuse, but it was partly true. I said, I don't want to go to museums and see what other people did because it'll influence me.
Oh.
And she was actually kind of impressed that I said that. And in a way, it was kind of true, but mostly it was a way to get out of going with them.
But were you also afraid to compare yourself to artists? I mean,
I think
you'd be intimidated.
Like, yes.
That would be part of it as well.
Maybe. Yes, definitely.
So in the ensuing years, have you been able to take a peek?
Oh, of course. And in fact, Harley and I went to Italy and saw some incredible things, you know, went to the museums in Florence, and we went to a wonderful show in Glasgow, Scotland, and in Edinburgh. And
So you can appreciate other people's art without comparing yourself.
And I go to things here, and I know lots of painters now, and I appreciate what they do tremendously. And yes.
Now, talk to us about teaching. You taught at BOCES and you taught at children's after-school programs. What is it that you teach?
Well, I taught what I considered beginning painting class because that's all I feel I'm qualified to teach. And I didn't even feel qualified to do that. But the woman who was running the adult education program in BOCES at the time that I was substitute teaching there once in a great while wanted me to do this course, and I resisted like crazy. And the fact that I had no credentials whatsoever seems amazing that she could even hire me, but she did. My first time teaching, I was so nervous in front of that class that the first words out of my mouth was, you know what? You guys scare the shit out of me. And this nice, voluptuous, big woman came up and just nuzzled me into her breasts and said, whispered in my ear, don't worry, none of us bite.
And that helped. <I'll>
helped, and I managed to do it.
But, so as a teacher, were you mainly inspiring people and just, you know, telling them that...
I hope I was.
That they, you know,
yeah,
talent is in you.
Oh, yeah, I definitely. In fact, I started out with... People would always tell me, I don't know what I'm doing in this class. I can't even draw a straight line. I heard that from so many people.
That is such a silly...
I said, you know what?
We don't want straight lines in art.
Yeah, so my first day always with a new group was, do you know any children who cannot draw? And everybody would shake their heads no. And I said, well, you used to be children, and you could draw too, and you could paint. But the problem is, somewhere along the line, somebody said to you, oh, that doesn't look like a car, or that's
exactly
a stupid tree. They don't look like that.
Yep.
And that was the end of your drawing, right? And they all would shake their heads, yes. And I said, well, we're going back to when you could draw and forget about all that stuff.
I think children's art is so great. And we do. As adults, we censor ourselves. I've talked to writers. They do the same thing.
Yes.
You've got to turn off the censor in order to be creative. That's just the way it is.
I actually have a book called The Writer's Brush, and Kurt Vonnegut has paintings in there, and it's all writers who are famous who also paint.
Mm.
And Kurt Vonnegut said about his painting, I'm pretty sure I'm quoting the right person. I'm not quoting, I'm paraphrasing. He said that he loved painting because he wasn't critical of it, and But writing was, he was so hard on himself. And I thought, when I read that, is exactly what I said. It was like the words were taken out of my mouth, but turned the other way. And so I think that's true, that that people who don't really care if they're painters can do it.
Mm-hmm.
They get in a class and all of a sudden they're playing and they feel like kids and it's fun. The people who think that they're working their way to being an artist, whatever that may be in their minds, are completely self-conscious about it.
And so, do you think you've been able to stay in touch with the child in yourself? Is that why you've been able to continue
much,
this?
Much more.
Through the years?
Much more. One thing that I do is I very rarely think out ahead of time what I'm going to put on a piece of paper. I sit down and I'm a blank slate. I just think, I like this color, or I want to draw this line, and then the painting starts. And I never know what the background's going to be, which any art teacher says, you better figure this out because you'll be stuck with a big problem. And it's true. A lot of times it is a big problem, and a lot of times my piece goes right in the garbage. But but a lot of times you can figure it out.
So you know, you said that you're influenced by, you know, people that you meet. And
uh-huh.
So you're influenced by everything that's happening in your life. So when you're sitting down, you must just call up what the day was like or
often yesterday. It will be some silly, amusing thing. For instance, I was looking out the window one time, and a man walked by, and he was slouched over, and he's one of those guys who had his belt under his armpits, and and he had a dog on a leash, which was the most droopy-eyed, biggest-eared basset hound I'd ever seen in my life. It was just the funniest-looking dog, and the man was just as funny as his dog and looked just like his dog in some way. Well, I ended up making him out of sort of stuff that's almost like clay, and you bake it in your oven at 240, 250 degrees, and it gets hard, and then you color it with acrylic, is the only kind of paint that will stick to it. That ended up being my first show. Lots of those guys.
Oh, that's so neat. Yeah, well, you know, all art comes from our personal and everyday lives. Annie, we are almost out of time. Give us your contact information so if people want to get in touch with you or get a hold of The Whore Next Door, your illustrated memoir, give us some contact information.
Well, I'm Annie Campbell. I'm in the phone book, Trumansburg. I have a landline, no cell phone. I'm in that Trumansburg phone book. Or Ithaca phone book. I have a website, anniecampbell.org. All the .coms were taken because I have a common name, so it's .org. And one of my friends said, you can remember it. It's like anniecampbell.orgasm, which made me laugh.
I think people will remember that. Well, Annie Campbell, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure talking to you.
And
keep up
thank
the good
you
work.
So much.
Keep up the individual good work. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Tish. I'm very grateful to be here.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.